So here we go. We are in the last section. We spent this is the 16th session of learning about the what and the why of prayer. We just basically broke down the average morning, thank you so much, the average morning into different sections of our tefillah. We started with Mode Ani, Asher Yatzar, Elokeinu Shomer, Al Tinas Yadayim. We looked at so many different sections of davening, and now we're coming towards the end of that. We finished the post-davening experience, and that which comes after the davening. So many different pieces that are worthwhile considering. We're going to close off this session with the Kriyas Shema Alamita, leading the Kriyas Shema Alamita, which is the end of the day. There obviously is much more to talk about. There's much more, many more pieces, and this could be a very, very long experience of learning. But we're going to just close this off now, and I would encourage, and I'm interested in people's suggestions for future series, because this actually happens to end a natural learning session that we've spent the last few weeks doing. So let's just appreciate this. Just to start off, just sort of a basic observation. I believe that brachos were instituted by Chazal, by Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, for many reasons, but one reason is as essentially as traffic lights in our life. They're regulators in our life. What does that mean? Is that we would carry on our lives just in one long continuum of experience if it were not for certain things that stopped us to think about why it is that we do what we do. So before we eat, before we experience something, Anshei Knesset HaGdolah wanted to reframe us. I wanted to refocus us on what are we actually supposed to be doing. The same is true as when we go to sleep at night. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to reframe that experience. And it's worthwhile thinking about this because I've noticed, and just looking around, I look at how few people I notice when they're grown up who say brachas, and it always shocks me when I see this, and I see people just eating, and let's forget the bracha rishon. I see so many people just leave, have a place where they have eaten without saying anything. Like sort of we keep just shooting through those traffic lights, right? We just keep being mindless about the experiences in our lives, and the brachas were there really to stop us, to make us actually just live a focused life, where we start telling ourselves that we need to understand the context of the experience that we are going through. So it pays a lot to think about this. It's so easy, you know. Or another one I'm just going to put out there, which I've noticed is an easily overlooked thing, which is tzitzis. I notice so many grown men who don't wear tzitzis. And it's such an easy thing. It's such an easy mitzvah to do. It's so little involved. If you read the Gemara in Brachos or Yochanan on his deathbed and what he would have given just to keep a few more mitzvahs. So Brachos is one of these things. It's so easy. It's a way station between activities to do. It's important to think about, and especially when it comes to Kriyas Shema, because a lot of the activities that the Chazal were framing when they put brachos in place are natural activities, right? So eating is something I naturally fall into. And sleeping is something I even more naturally fall into, literally. I fall asleep is the expression in English. So we have to think about how we go to sleep, not fall asleep. And that's why we have Kriyas Shema Alamita. So let's think about a few of these pieces together. First of all, just a special mazel tov before we start to David and Irene. Just celebrated the birth of a grandson this last week, and Bezras Hashem, the Gebris this coming week. It should be Bashar Tovu Mitzlachas. Bezras Hashem, wonderful, wonderful news. Let's learn. So a few basics in terms of the what. So you'll notice something interesting is that when the Kriyas Shema has a number of components in it. It has Birkas HaMapil, then it has Kriyas Shema, then it has a lot of all these Tehillim and verses afterwards. It can be quite an extensive experience, if you've noticed it, depending on which pamphlet or tomb you are reading. So question becomes, is one of the things that you see different versions have differently is where the Hamapil lives. Is the Hamapil the beginning of the text or is it the end of the text? And you'll notice that different cards or different siddurim will have it in different places. It happens to be a debate. We'll get into it a little bit later on between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch as to what that is, but what should we do? Like normative halacha. So, you know, okay, there's a machlokes, but practically speaking, what should we be doing? So the Mishnah Berurah says that it really depends on the nature of the person saying it, practically speaking. If you are the type of person that knows by the end of Kriyas Shema, you will be in a semi-comatose state, right? Then it is better to say, I might be at the beginning. And if you know you can make it through without being interrupted by sleep, then you should say it. You should say it at the end. Okay, so in terms of practically speaking, that's how the Mishavura tells us is the normative practice. Yes?
Normative practice for me is that I read before I go to sleep.
Yeah, so hang on, we haven't got there yet. John, you have to give me a little slack over here. It was just one question. So let's go a little further into this. That is a question to address in a second. Another question, which is also a text-based question. You'll notice in some Kriyas Shema pamphlets, you'll have three parashas of Kriyas Shema, and in some you'll have one parasha of Kriyas Shema, just the first one. Which is it? Which one should we be doing? Should we be doing all three? I'm really tired tonight. Is it all right to do one? So how does that work precisely? And then we'll get to John's question. And that is, so actually, it really depends. It depends on what you did in shul. So if you davened Kriyas Shema correctly in shul at Maariv, then you only need to do one paragraph. But if you did not do it correctly, then you needed to be doing all three. Here's a little funny thing. I would wager that all the men in this room don't do it correctly. Why? Because most of us daven mincha maariv bizman, which means at the time of shkia. So how is it arranged? So as an example, this week when mincha maariv is at 7:55, why is mincha maariv at 7:55? Because the shkia is hovering right now around the 8:12s, and it's going to drop downwards towards the 8:06s by the end of the week, right? That's where shkia is hovering. So we ensure at shul, the shul regulates it, that mincha is going to be finished the whole week through at least 10 minutes before shkia, before sunset that day. So then the rabbi gets up there and gives the Dvar Torah. And the reason he does it is not just to hear the sound of his voice, but also to make sure that Maariv starts after shkia. Because you can't daven Maariv before shkia. So therefore, actually, just interestingly enough, the Dvar Torah will be shorter towards the end of the week than it is the beginning of the week, because there's less time to cover. But nonetheless, be it as it may, so the Maariv will start. Now, am I allowed to daven Maariv after shkia once the sun is set? And the answer is yes. Am I allowed to daven Kriya? Am I allowed to say Kriyas Shema after the sun sets? The answer is no. For Kriyas Shema, it has a different time regulation, and it goes after Tseis HaKochavim, which means to say that the Kriyas Shema that we're saying in a regular Zman Mincha Maariv is a wonderful thing, and it serves the purpose of learning of Torah, reading Torah paragraphs before doing the Shemona Esrei, but it is not the Kriyas Shema, which means that a person has not fulfilled the obligation of saying Kriyas Shema on a regular Mincha Maariv in Shul. There are some shuls which have an extended break in it, right? So some shuls will have a 20-minute least break or so on to sort of push it past one of the tzeses of the Vilna Gaon at the very least, which is less useful here because here it is a longer, a Ben HaShemoshes is a longer twilight zone. A bit as may, if a person davens Bizman, they would need to say all three paragraphs of Kriyas Shema. And here you're going to ask a very good question, which is, if you look in the shul announcements, the shul announcements on Friday night say, if you daven Maariv too early, then repeat the three paragraphs of Kriyas Shema. But it doesn't say that on the weekday. And the truth is, it should. The announcement should say, every night, please repeat Kriyas Shema with three paragraphs after XYZ time, unless you're davening a late Maariv. If you're davening a late Maariv, then you're fine. Your Kriyas Shema counted as Kriyas Shema. Just a fun fact, and that would reflect itself in this as well. What was that?
So
we should have it. We should have an announcement and count this as a public service announcement right now that that our Mincha Maariv does not count. Yes, John.
When we're on the fly, which most of us are, let's say we're driving up to the country on a Thursday night, how do we calculate for the purposes these purposes that we're discussing? Saints. This I run into this problem all the time.
One very obvious solution is myzmanim.com, and for the public is very easy, myzmanim. But otherwise, Jews should be cognizant of sunset, and once you're cognizant of sunset, add 50 minutes to that for Kriyas Shema, and you're set. 50 is what Rav Moshe.
There's a phone number you could call too.
There you go. Thank you. So we're all set. But I'll leave it up to everybody here. Everybody's very intelligent and can figure out how to work out the times of Krishna. But fast forward, it's very hard to know. The old days used to be looking at the sky. Today, it's because of the light pollution, it's harder to know. Even in the northeast, it's very hard to know because of light pollution. That three-star measurement. Even in the country, we're still affected by the light pollution to a large degree, so it's very hard to see that. But the rule of thumb in the northeast is take sunset and add 50 minutes and you're set, and sunset changes every day. Now, by the way, it's not just the Jews who are interested in this. I don't know if you notice that if you're traveling with Waze, it switches between the day setting and the night setting at sunset, mm-hmm. So it goes dark around that time, right? But only Jews would notice that because you know about Mincha time. But nonetheless, we should be aware of our Mincha Maariv times. Now, lying down. Can we take it lying down? It is Kriya Shema Lameta after all. So the truth is that the Mishnah Berurah actually does raise the, based on the Shulchan Aruch, does bring different perspectives as to when one can say this. And Lechad Chila, one should be saying it's sitting up or standing. But obviously, if a person perhaps has already done the Kriya Shema in Shul or at the right time and is already lying down, it is possible to say lying down on one side. But it is better to be saying it's sitting up as well. And general rule is there are things that we know that when we say lying down, we're not going to finish saying, right? So we should have that following guiding principle as well. What about reading a book? So am I allowed to be reading a book afterwards? So it actually depends on the nature of the hamapil. Generally speaking, we'll see that many poskim are concerned about having interruptions. So the interruptions they talk about, for example, are eating, drinking, having a conversation, and even let's say asher yotzar after the bathroom are things which are lechatchila better to avoid. So much so that even in some of the later achron talk about, let's say a person needs to go to the restroom after saying a mapil before falling asleep, that perhaps it's better not to say asher yotzar afterwards, because one will say asher yotzar in the morning to avoid creating a hefsek. But be it as it may, I saw in the Tefillah Kehilchos, actually, when I was just reviewing this from different angles, that reading a book may not be a concern. One's not going having a deep conversation with somebody, one's reading a book, that may be grounds that might be sufficient to be able to not create a hefsek. One's not speaking, one's not interrupting, one's thinking as it happens. What about if I wake up? So let's say some people have this thing where they go to sleep and they wake up and they wake up again, right? Whether it be a restroom break or it's just one's mind or it's just the physiological stage. What about, do I say it multiple times? And the answer is generally speaking, no. There are those who talk about it, but generally speaking, it is a one-time deal, which will also reflect on the nature of it. So we say it, and therefore, if a person maybe wake up another two times at night, that bracha has covered them throughout the night. Reflecting on that, what about during the daytime then? So if I go to sleep during the daytime and I have significant naps on a Shabbos afternoon, as an example, would one say I'm uphill? And the answer is we don't do that as well. What about a person who cannot fall asleep? So you know that you're going to say hamapil, and you're going to hope and you're going to pray, but there's no guarantees. So do you say the bracha then? And the answer is we actually do. We'll see why in a second, just because it depends on the nature of it. So let's drive straight into this. Does the Torah tell us to say Kriya Shema Lemitzah? Not obviously. The Torah doesn't explicitly say this, but there are a few indications. There are a few hints to the nature of this. So, as an example, in Parshas Balak, we have this very interesting remez, very interesting hint. When Bilam is giving a blessing to the nation of Israel, he says, "Hain am, this is a nation kilavi akum, who gets up like a lion. V'kari yisnasa lo yishkav ad yochal teref, does not go to sleep until they've eaten the prey, v'dam chalalim yishten the blood of the and drink the blood of the slain." Well, it's quite an image there, yeah. Right? So the Rashi actually says this is metaphoric for the way a Jew is expected to go to sleep. Says Rashi in the source 2, "Balaylo al mitosoy, lo yishkava balaylo al mitosoy, ad shu oichel umechabel kol mazik habole tarfoy." Until they fought away any destructive forces which are trying to hurt them. Keitzad kores hashmal mitosoy umafkid ruchoy biyad hamakom. Person says Kriya Shema on their bed, and fends off, fights off, that's the, we'll call the violent description here in the metaphor of fighting off any attacking forces, that's lo yishkavad yochal teref. That's what the Kriyas Shema is doing. Interesting observation as to why that should be the nature of Kriyas Shema, but that's what a person is doing. There is an important thing to think about over here, and that is that if one wants to wake up like a lion, one cannot go to sleep like a dog. Right? There's an idiom as such. And that's true over here as well. If one wants to wake up like a lion, kelavi yakum, then you need to go to sleep by fending off all these other forces as well. So it's worthwhile thinking what these forces are. Perhaps we'll explore in a moment. But it in terms of how the day begins depends on how the night ended, is what the pasuk is saying. And Kriyas Shema Al Amita seems to be an important link in that chain. That's what Rashi is saying over here. It was a blessing that Bilam was saying. I would think that if you take it further, I think it comes back to the idea of brachas in general, right? I always, it's remarkable to me, like when you stop on the side of the highway and you at this rest stop and you see the fellow, in their t-shirt and flip-flops walking out, eating their pizza, which they just bought in their, their super big coffee. They're walking out there, drinking at the same time with their chicken wings on top. And it's hard to imagine what it must be like not to have all the regulations, it's like we can get the bag of chips, that's basically it. at the rest stop. And there's so many things which stop us eating. And then even when we got the food, we have to stop and we have to stand still to say a bracha. Thank God, right? Meaning God allowed us, gave us a framework, right? So it's not like just like, you walk by and opening your mouth and everything falls into it. Like so the same thing with sleep, right? What Bilam is saying, you're a special nation. You don't just like, fall backwards on the couch, and then that's it. In a magnificent spread eagle position, snore. You actually calibrate. I'm going to go to sleep, right? So that's what's being said in this pasuk, is that you're a unique nation. Think about it. Act like that. That's what's being said here. Now, so the Gemara talks about this in a few places as to what we're doing. So it's obviously a very early enactment. So the first is there's a few places. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says in the Gemara in Brachos in Daf Dalet Amud Beis, Af al pi shekara adam kriyas shema beis haknesses. You may have already davened in shul. I think he's talking about after the right time, right? Mitzvah likrois al mitasai. Even though you did accomplish that, you're supposed to do it again on your bed. Amar Reb Yosi my kro. What's the pasuk that tells us about this? As it says in Tehillim, Rigzu v'al techta'u imiru bilvavchem al mishkavchem v'damu sela. So the word rigzu is a complicated word because it means, they translate it over here in this, the Sansino edition, as tremble, right? It could be also agitation, which is another word. Why are we using that word is a fascinating observation. But al techtu donsen, say in your hearts, on your beds, on your cot, v'domu sela, and be silent. So it's interesting is that there seems to be a way to go to sleep. And a part of that is doing something in your heart. Imru bilvavchem, al mishkavchem v'damu sela. So before you go to sleep, say something in your heart. Have something right that you say beforehand. Prepare yourself for that experience as well. Interesting enough, the Gemara then says perhaps a Talmud Chacham does not need to say that. And the Gemara says that's not true. Even a Talmud Chacham needs to say one pasuk of Rachamim. So it seems that there's something necessary for everybody. Perhaps different formulas as to how it works. I was looking at the Rav Steinsaltz Gemara on this, and he said an interesting thing. Again, this is very much his own creativity here. But he says, why? What's the purpose of this? Why are you saying Kriyas Shema if Rav Yoshua ben Levi has already said that you clearly have accomplished Kriyas Shema in Shul, right? So what's the function is, this is, he says in his observation, Kedei sheyakayem bepoel b'shachbecha. What does the Kriyas Shema say? You're supposed to say it b'kumecha when you wake up, and b'shachbecha when you're going to sleep. So yes, b'shachbecha is the defining the time, and that's the whole first brach mishnah in all of Shas, is when is b'shachbecha? At the time that people are going to sleep. So that's when you're supposed to be saying Kriyas Shema. But he's saying, but actually, practically speaking, it's also more closer to what the Torah was asking us to do when we say B'Shachma. First, this is a fascinating observation. This is not mainstream thought. We'll see other reasons, but this is observation. Yeah, A.B.
Could this be like a form of bidui that a person does as he gives over?
Good question. Good question. So there are actually those who actually have bidui as part of the Kriyas Shema L'Amita. Okay, so whether it is or it's the time to be doing it, There is that notion. There's sort of like we'll call it the daily check-in at the end of the day, right? There is the Ribono Shel Olam, which we have, which many say beforehand, which is releasing other people from one's debt. You know, to go to sleep, releasing other people from all the anger and the difficulty and so on. So just sort of cleaning one's slate before one goes to sleep is certainly there. But it may have those ideas, but just to be fair, that there are nuschaos that have vidui in it. The Shlach Kodesh talks about that. So now let's look at the components. So that was the first thing, is just Kriyat Shema itself. Then where does the Birkas HaMapil come from? So this comes up in the Samech HaMabez in the Gemara in Brachos. Almost the entire Nusach of our Bracha of Birkas HaMapil comes straight from the Gemara. There are a few bells and whistles later on in times which were added into it, which are all wonderful. But the Gemara says in Sor Svav, HaNichnas Lishon Al Mitosai, person going to sleep. Omer Mishma Yisrov Ad Vayom Shemoy says, and what, which paragraph is that? Just the first paragraph. The whole Nusach is over here. Very beautiful description. It's a really beautiful bracha about what sleep should look like. And in the very end, it's the Baruch Hashem Omer La'olam Kolo B'Chvoda, Hashem who lights up the world with his honor. Kimata'er, that, what does that mean? Kimata'er? When you wake up, Aramaic words. Okay, mitzarer with an aleph is to describe in Hebrew. Over here, mitzarer, this is where a person is waking up. And then you say the other part of it, which is elakana shama, that's on the other end. So we have this bracha of Amapil. It sounds like it is said with the first paragraph of Kriyat Shema. This is an additional component. We have to ask ourselves, what's the nature of this bracha? We'll get there in a second. Just wanted to get the details out here. Part 3 of this is said in the Gemara in Shavuos. It describes that when Rabbi Yehoshua would go to sleep at night, he would say what's called Parashas Negaim, the paragraph of plagues, or Pegaim, attackers, dangerous forces. What does that mean precisely? So the Gemara says what he would say is, in Saul 6, V'omer Yoshev B'Seiser Elyon B'Tzel Shaddai Ir Yisronan Amar HaShem Atzim 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 Atzim. So you say that this part of this is Tehillim, Tzadi Aleph, which is a very special prayer we say at special times. When else do we know that we say this, by the way? When is it usually said? At a funeral, right? And it talks about when a person is, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, so to speak, is the protection, is the overarching protection for the neshama. This is when we escort the niftar. It's worthwhile noting that this shouldn't be lost upon us, that sleep is a me'ain of Misa, that sleep is a handing over of one's soul and separation of soul and body to a certain degree, so it's worthwhile thinking about that process. And also saying the third mizmor in Tehillim. So these are the practices of Rabbi Yeshua. He does. This seems to be a separate thing to Kriya Shema Lemita. This is what's called Parashas Negaim. He would say these things, and it seems to be relating to Negaim, perhaps fending off certain damaging forces in the world as well. This has become part of our Kriyat Shema. So if you'll notice in our Kriyat Shema, if you open up an average sitter, it goes Hamapil, Kriyat Shema, and then these two paragraphs. They leave out the Koteres, which means they leave out the introductory verse of paragraph of Mizmor Gimel, but it's Hashem Arabu Tzarai, which is Mizmor Gimel, which is based on the practice of Rabbi Yeshua in the Gemara over here. And later on, you'll see in the Gaonic time, extra additions added on. So for instance, the Torah quotes in Saul 7, Rav Amram Gaon. So we're talking about before the time of the Rishonim, after the time of the Gemara, we're roughly in the years 500 to 1100, common era. So because of Rav Amram was one of the first people to formalize the Siddur that we have, the Siddur of Rav Amram Gaon, in it he would say, Baruch Hashem Bayom, Baruch Hashem Balayla, Baruch Hashem Shochbeinu, Baruch Hashem Bekumeinu. Obviously these psukim relate to getting up and going to sleep. Vayomer Hashem Al Sotim, Yigar Hashem B'chol Al Sotim, Yigar Hashem B'chol B'chem Yerushalayim. Halo Ze Ud Mutzah V'Eish. Then you quote a pasuk in Zechariah, the third parak about being protected. Yeshua, kind God, being protected. Hashem Shomrecha, Hashem Tzilcha Yadiminecha, Yishmacha, Hashem Yishmacha Mikorah, Yishmar Tzarshecha, Hashem Yishmar Tzayzcha V'echa Me'atav Yadalam, adding a few extra psukim to him. V'yodchav Kidruchi Podisa Asi Hashem Kelei Mes, I'm giving over my soul to you, Hashem, you're the God of truth. Yivrecha Hashem Yishmarecha, Yar Hashem Ponevcha Alecha V'yichonecha, Yisa Hashem Ponev Alecha V'yasem Lecha Shalom. So then you add in Birkas Kohanim, so a lot of different pieces that are put into the end of here. These are not part of what the Gemara had said. V'adoni Avizal, Haya Omer, who's his father? The Rosh Rabbeinu Asher is the father of Rabbeinu Yaakov, who wrote the Torah. Hashkivenu ad samoch lechasim, that he would also say Hashkivenu without the bracha at the end. So you notice these are all the components we have in that Kriya Shema. We're talking about very long, at least 1,000 years in terms of what our Siddur looks like in terms of the Kriya Shema Lemeta. And then he talks about taking off your garments and doing it in an appropriate way. Fascinating. So we have all these different components which appear over here. One interesting Kabbalistic addition over here, the Elia Rabbah quotes the Shlah, who quotes the Tashbetz on the top of page 4, who says, Roim Elishuascha, V'chol Shish Aponim, Lishuascha Kiviz Hashem, Lishuascha Hashem Kivizi, Kiviz Hashem Lishuascha, Kivizi Lishuascha Hashem, Hashem Kivizi Lishuascha, Hashem Lishuascha Kivizi. Adkan. So Shlach HaKadosh will take these three words and say them in all the six permutations you can have put three words in. Okay, he says, "Kakos Mate Moshe." Quotes the Mate Moshe. "Vatam la'avriach hamazikim hamashchisim mikol shisha kitzvoy sa'olam shemala mato v'dalad ruchos." So why six times or six permutations? Because of trying to fend off dangerous forces in all six directions, up, down, and then northeast, west, and south. So that's sort of why six. We don't do it that way. We only do three. We do it three times, and the way we do it with that pasuk, Lishuascha Kiviz Hashem, which is one of the shortest pasukim in the Torah, in the bracha of Yaakov Avinu to his son Dan. So what we do is Lishuascha Kiviz Hashem, Kiviz Hashem, Lishuascha Hashem, Lishuascha Kiviz. And just the way we're doing it essentially is we're essentially Hashem's salvation, Hashem's name is moving closer to the beginning, right? Essentially, we're seeing the salvation of Hashem as his name becomes more expressed in that verse. That's where we're saying, but where does that practice come from? It comes from this Kabbalistic practice. So this accounts for almost all the things over here. There is one other interesting addition, which you'll see in later Achronim, and that is for a man to say the first four chapters of Tehillim after the Kriya Shema. You'll sometimes see Ashrei. That's the first paragraph in Tehillim, and the four paragraphs over then. That is how a person should be in the mindset not to have an unnecessary seminal emission. That's an interesting observation, which is said. You'll see actually on the night of Yom Kippur, it specifically says that as well. You'll see it in the Machzorim, but on a regular night, that's also put over there. So these are the different components of the Kriya Shema. So now, question is, what's the nature of this? And perhaps the nature of it is best to focus on the bracha of Hamapil. Kriya Shema itself, there may be multiple reasons, but what about Hamapil? So it may actually depend on where you say it, when it is placed in the actual liturgy, in terms of relationship to sleep. Because just a quick recap about how brachas work. There are three categories of brachas that the rabbis instituted. The one category is called birkas hanehenin, when I am enjoying something in the world. I'm eating, I'm smelling, I'm having a physical pleasure. I have a bracha which frames that experience. Then there is the Birkas HaMitzvah, I'm about to perform mitzvah, I'm about to shake the lulav, I'm about to hear the shofar, for a man I'm about to put on tzitzis. So I say a bracha, and we know that those brachas are unique because they have a different nusach. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, extra phrase, Asher Kidishonu B'mitzvasov V'tzivonu, X, right? So that's the Asher Kidishonu B'mitzvasov V'tzivonu is the mitzvah part of it. And then there's a third type of bracha, which is the Birkas HaShevach V'Oida. We're in wonder, emotional reflection on thunder, lightning, rainbows, large amount of people, mountainscapes, the Mediterranean Sea, all kinds of wonderful things. Those all fall into Birkas, the bracha of Birkas HaShevach V'Oida. So where does the Birkas HaMapil fall? So that becomes the question, is what's the nature of this experience that we're supposed to be doing? So it may depend on when we put it. So as an example, there's a very important Magen Avraham. We're not going to look at the whole thing, but just the beginning is important. He says in source 9, so the second line, which is Sif Cotton Bays, Mavarach HaMapil, Mashma de Birkas HaMapil, Yomer Achar Shma. He says that the Shulchan Aruch's language indicates that we actually should say the Birkas HaMapil at the end of the process of all the rest of the things. Shetei HaBrachas Semucha L'Sheina. That should be right next to sleep. V'chein Ikar Kain Nirali. And so it seems to me should be the case. It is the Misidur Loshan Atur Ushur Rechonoch Mashma D'Achar Shma Yomer HaMapil. So it's interesting, the Shulchan Aruch indicates it's almost as if we say Shema, HaMapil, then all the other Tehillim and the rest of the stuff that we have. He's saying, the reason he suggests for that is because that is all about warding off perhaps damaging forces, which is not considered a hefsek or a break. Now, when you use this language, that you need to have a HaMapil adjacent to the sleep process, what does that tell you about the nature of that bracha? What type of bracha is that then, if this is the way he's framing it? So it is interesting. Which bracha of the three types of brachas is most necessary to be to be closest to the activity. So the mitzvah, yes, that's true. And that's over la'asiyason, but this is not a birkas hamitzvah because we don't have that extra phrase in the birkas hamitzvah, right? This is not shekishon. Birkas hanen, right? So the birkas is a blessing on food, which is why if I'm holding an apple, right, and I say the bracha on the apple and it falls on the ground, right, and it gets ruined, then I have a problem to say a new bracha because the bracha has to be really very much connected to the activity that I'm doing. When it comes to the birkas hashevach, the Birkas HaShevach actually is responding to a phenomenon, so you should have it close enough, but there's a lot more flexibility in terms of the Birkas HaShevach, in terms of the proximity to the experience as well. So the fact that the Magen Avraham is telling us you've got to make sure that you're going to sleep right after you say this bracha, and that's why it's put even after the paragraph of Kriya Shema, after the whole experience, is telling us that it sounds like it's a little more about the Nenim. What's the Hana over here? Don't we all wish we could sleep more, right? So that's the point he's saying, is that sleep is a physical activity, right? Our doctor just walked out, who's a sleep specialist over here, and it is fascinating actually. When Dr. Huberfeld was here, he gave a lecture in the shul on the topic of sleep, and he pointed out that there's two reasons why the body needs sleep. One is because of circadian rhythm, so there's light cycles that reflect the need for sleep. But there is another reason as well, that there's a certain enzyme which builds up in the brain and then needs to be metabolized after a certain period of time. And one becomes heavy if that's not metabolized, and there's a natural need for sleep. Jet lag is when the two are not in tandem with each other, right? So jet lag is when the circadian rhythm is telling me it's light now, but one's brain has this enzyme which one hasn't been able to metabolize because one hasn't had the time to sleep. So one feels tired and heavy in the middle of the day, right? That's when jet lag happens. There's two separate indicators. I'm just quoting Dr. Huberfeld here. But it's just so fascinating. So sleep is a very pleasurable activity for many people. Think about what we do, how many loops we jump through to be able to get a good night's sleep. Right, speak to Celia, and how much money they're going to charge us to do this. So he says that's a hanos. So you say a bracha on that. The bracha needs to be close to it. However, if you look at other mefarshim, like a later contemporary of the Magen Avraham, the Eli Rab on the Shulchan Aruch says in source 10, quoting the Shiari Knesset Gdola, and he says, "Motzasi bebirkas Avraham daf chav zayin kasha shema lo yishan k'moy she'dein mevarchin al hashen b'sukkah." He says, wait a second. Let's say you say the bracha of Amapil and you can't fall asleep. So how could you say the bracha then? How could you say the bracha on something which is not definite, which is not imminent, which is not 100% guaranteed? Let's say I see, you know, that an apple is flying through the air. Can I say the bracha if I do not know if I'm going to be able to catch it and grab it? No, you've got to have it in your hand, right? You can't say a bracha on an indefinite outcome. He says, potentially, to Birkas Amapil, hu al teva hashena. It's on the nature of sleep that God instituted in the world. She'ir shashla yishan. People just cannot make without sleep. What's the most effective form of torture or an extraction of information today? Okay. It's sleep deprivation. Right? It's much more effective than physical torture. Aval v'sukah imistayu lo yishan klal oidi yashlamah hashamapil hu min hoga shel oylam koma birkas anoysan asech yivina v'afil lo yashan mevorech. Perhaps it's not only on my personal experience of that, but it's on that nature in the world that God allowed human beings to sleep. Remember, there was an old TV show, I don't remember what it was, about two aliens who came down in the form of human body, and they wanted to act like human beings, and so they get onto a bed, and they're just lying there looking at the ceiling, and they say, well, these human beings, they lie down, but what are we supposed to do next, right? So, but when it comes down to this, thank God. Thank God we have this time. It's the grand equalizer. Imagine that you could bank sleep. Imagine that you could, like, you know, sort of put a credit in, and, you know, you could have an army of people and sleep them for 3 months so they could just, you know, attack for the next 3 months. Terrifying thoughts about what people would do with this. It's the grand equalizer. Give it 18 hours and everybody's, and that's it. We're all very vulnerable. We're flat on our faces. So thank you, Akash Baruch Hu, for allowing us this renewal process. And we're thanking on that. If that's the case, that's much more of Shevach in general, and it relates less to my personal experience about it. This is lightning. God, thank you for allowing that there's a discharge of negative charge, and it precipitates a storm, and there's rain. Thank you for all these things, Hashem. So thank you for the notion of sleep, and therefore it doesn't relate specifically. With that, if one looks at it from the Eli Rabbah's perspective, obviously there's more flexibility in terms of how close it is to sleep, which would also explain why, like in the Rambam, as an example, the Hamapil comes first, because it's less consequential that it's right next to the activity. Right, this is where we see these ideas expressed elsewhere. So now, that's the Hamapil itself. But what about the actual Shema itself? So why are we doing the Shema? So the first most obvious reason is, actually, most people don't realize this, it's the third Rashi in all of Shas. Rashi is on the first mission in Maseches Brachos, which describes that you're supposed to say Kriya Shema Ve'ad Na'at Ad Sof HaShmur HaRishon. I didn't put this in the notes, but Rashi says that he says the following. I'm just going to quote from this Rashi. He says, "Im ke nomer koinos la bebeis hakneses kedei lamod betfila mitoch divrei Torah." Why do we say Kriya Shema in Shul if we're only davening right after the Zman, like most Maros are? So why are we saying it then? He says, "Kedei lamod betfila mitoch divrei Torah." That you're saying your Shemona Esrei after Divrei Torah, which is Shema, but not the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, but just the paragraphs of the Torah of Shema. And he says, "Achi Tani beBraisa v'Yerushalmi." He says, "Ofichach Choyva Alenu Likroisa Mishetechshach Uve Kriyasa Bahar Pasha Rishona SheAdam Korei Al Mitasa Yatzva." Saying the first paragraph, one's bed, one is fulfilled the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So Rashi says the most basic thing is if one didn't say Kriya Shema properly, one should be saying it on one's bed because one needs to fill in for what one didn't do. If one didn't say it, there's a mitzvah to say it or not. That's it. If a person did not daven Mariv, let's say a woman is not opted into the to Mariv, and is saying Kriya Shema Lamitzah is literally the Kriya Shema of the night. So that's number one, is most basic. But another part of this is that do you remember the Gemara Brachos and Daf Samach of Beis that we noticed over there? The first thing the Gemara says is when a person is nichnas limitoso, they say Hamapil. Then what does it say? The next paragraph in the Gemara is, when you wake up, you say, Elokai Neshama. God, you put the Neshama into me. Says the Me'iri, Rav Menachem Me'iri on the Gemara in the 1400s, in Source 11. You notice something interesting? That's the bracha that does not start with the baruch. Why don't you say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokei Melech Haolam, Elokai Neshama Shenasatavi, or whatever else you would put in that phrase there? Because it leans upon its friend. Like 18 of the 19 brachos of the Shemona Esrei don't start with Baruch because they are relying on the first brach which started with the Baruch. He says the same thing over here. Why? Essentially, Lakan Hashama is the tail end bracha of the Birkas HaMapil that you said before you go to sleep, which is fascinating, which means to say we are framing the experience of sleep. Sleep, in a certain sense, is being framed by two brachas. And how do we end the Kriya Shema Lamita? I'm giving over my Yorchav Kidruchi, I'm giving you my neshama. What's the morning? Is Lakanosh Neshata B'Tahiri Atamachzir. Right, you returned it, and you're going to return it in the future. Which means to say, we're framing this experience. Very beautiful, right? We don't just go to sleep. We don't just wake up. We talk about it on both ends, and we appreciate the experience. Very, very beautiful. That's number one. Now, then in terms of appreciating the sleep itself, the Gemara tells us in Brachos a fascinating, very obscure idea. Al teishu al mita amitas aramis. Don't sleep on an Armenian bed or an Aramean woman. Don't walk behind a shul when, Iri is davening and you walking in front of it, kind of thing. When Iri sees you not davening, as examples, the Gemara says, "Al teishu b'mita aramis." What does that mean? Don't go to sleep like a non-Jew, right? Don't go to sleep like an Aramean. Can we just, falls asleep? Say, make it sacred, say Kriya Shema. So it means say it's framing. Anything we do actively, thoughtfully is different. There's another few explanations. The Gemara, what that means is that the Gemara describes that there was one time there was a fellow who sat on the bed on our Aramean woman, and she asked him to sit on the bed, and he refused to, and then they found that there was a dead body of a child underneath the bed, and she was going to frame him for a crime he didn't commit. So, not something new in Jewish history, unfortunately. Blood libels go very far back, but nonetheless, just be careful. That's the Gemara saying is because of that. But be it as it may, that a person should be thinking about the uniqueness of being a Jew with this. Now, the most famous idea behind Kriyas Shema Lemita is Mazikim, which means dangerous forces. So, in that case of Yeshua ben Navi that we talked about before in Source 14, the Gemara in Shavuos, is he asks the question. He says, remember he said, Yosheva says, so Elyon, and he said, Hashem Morabu Tzarai. He said those Mizmor 91 and number 4 before going to sleep. So he asks the question, Amalu Lahani Kroy Vagani. So he would say these psukim as a protection. So Gemara says, Hechi Avid Hachi. How could you do such a thing? You can't use Torah as a healing process. Now, just to clarify, you are allowed and absolutely must daven, but to what's called loichesh alamaka, which means to say to whisper psukim as a segula over a wound. That's what we're talking about. He says Torah has not been meant to be used as incantations, right? For all kinds of things like that. People get very trapped in these kind of things today. Amulets and all that stuff is coming back, right? So Torah, got to be careful about what we're using Torah for. So how can you say these things? He says, lahagen shani, to protect is different than to heal. Okay, yeah, right, prevention, 1 ounce of prevention, whole pound of intervention. So that's what is being described over here. So it really is chasing away something. As an example, the other Gemara in Brachos also says on Rabbi Yitzchak, I'll call a kore kriyashma ba'ala mitasai, mazikin b'deli mimenu, you say kriyashma, mazikim, dangerous spirits, separate from Yisrael. You and he talks about these psukim, b'nei reshef, yag bi'uf, all kinds of fascinating forces, what b'nei reshef are, and these interesting things that happen at night. So you say to yourself, well, when's the last time you met one of those? When did anybody have any encounter with any of these things? So the truth is that the way it's described, the way that the Ramchal describes in Derech Hashem, Derech Hashem essentially is an encyclopedia of Jewish thought. So he talks about all kinds of fascinating things, and he says, like, sleep. How does sleep work exactly? So he says, when a person sleeps, essentially, the higher levels of the neshama, of the person's spirit, are become less tethered to the body. So to speak, the kite string is lengthened, right? So they're no longer as incarcerated by the body. So yes, the nefesh remains, which is the lowest level of the soul, but the ruach and the neshama and the chayim and the yechidah start drifting, which is when a person sleeps. Yes, wait a second, but we can physiologically measure them and put sleep meters on them. Yes, you're right. We can measure the body and the expression of the nefesh, but the parts you can't measure with those instruments are actually traveling. And they have experiences in the divine world, says the Ramchal, which accounts for some aspects of dreams, not all, so the rest of it might be the challenge, right, are physiological, but there are spiritual emanations which are as a function of where the higher parts of the neshama is wandering, where it is exploring. And also in that area, the negative forces that the neshama encounters in those realms could be damaging. So when we are saying the Kriya Shema Lemita, we obviously think immediately, you know, is the door locked? Are the windows closed? Is the alarm on? Right, all those things. But no. You have to think about where you will be metayel, right? Where your soul is going to be experiencing. That's what's being referred to here in the Gemara. Those are things you don't feel and you won't be able to describe, but there's something else going on, which is referred. Now, that's a more Kabbalistic angle. It's worthwhile learning the Ramchal inside. But from those who live in the rationalistic camp who say, I don't subscribe, it's very hard for me to understand that. So the Meiri does say, very fascinating thing, which is a worthwhile thing, and very, very practical in Source 17. There's a little paragraph here. He says, V'atam kriya zu pirshu batalu ha'ma'arev lehavriach es ha'mazikim ubi uroi, says the Meiri, very much in the rationalistic camp. Etzli ha'mazikim ha'yudim v'hem ha'dayos ha'kozu Hakoizim v'yiskiku be'itos ha'pana liyached es Hashem shalo yite be'munos ha'shniyos. Is referring to bad and corrupt thought processes. Means to say, we are incarcerated in many thought cycles that we don't allow ourselves out of. We hold suffering, we hold grudges, we hold envy and jealousy in our hearts, and we don't allow ourselves to escape these things. Says the Meiri, that's the mazikim. The mazikim isn't some sort of extraterrestrial force which is affecting us. It's ourselves not letting ourselves go. And so at the end of the day, when we're saying Kriya Shema Lemita, to protect ourselves from ourselves, that's when we say the Kriya Shema Lemita. Just relax. Let it go. I just started reading The Choice. Right? And just thinking about the way she describes releasing oneself from one's own prison. We are imprisoned by ourselves. And Most people in life don't change. They just become more like themselves. And if we don't work on ourselves, so every night we have a check-in. And the check-in is can I release myself from negative thought patterns, bad emunos, bad beliefs? And those bad beliefs start at home. How do I see myself? And that reflects to how I see my family and how I see the world. And I can't forgive myself. I can't forgive them. And that's what the Kriya Shema is about. So it's much more practical. And by the way, usually when you walked into the Meiri side of the camp, it's much more work. It's all nice to go with the side of the Kabbalistic side that by saying these things, I'm protected. And that's wonderful. And there's a huge amount of truth to that. When you come into the idea of the Meiri, I'll give you an example. The Meiri says, what is the impact of eating simanim on Rosh Hashanah? So Kabbalistically, and then yer, and the beginning, and sweet, and all these kind of things. The Meiri says, it's so when you're eating your meal, and after you've spent all these hours in shul, and now you are burying your face in the challenge, right? It says, it's meant to be that you're supposed to be thinking about, do you deserve the things you're asking for in your davening? What am I going to do right now to be different? That's much harder to achieve than eating the simonim and thinking about Kabbalistic elements of what the year before, because it requires work. Right, so just to appreciate the difference in perspective here. And that's what's supposed to be happening in Kriya Shema. So AB, coming back to this element of vidui is related to this idea as well. Coming back to that Ribbono Shel Olam about releasing other people at the beginning is related to this idea. A lot of self-work over here. And of course, the finally last point over here is, as the first halacha in Shulchan Aruch says, Yiskaber ba'akari lamod ba'boker la'avodas borei, she'ehu ma'oreres ha'shachar, he's supposed to awake like a lion, to bring about to wake up the dawn, and the Ramos says then in order to do that, when you go to sleep, you need to know who you're going to sleep in front of, right? It's not like you checked out when you came in the front door. It starts off the way you go to sleep in order to be able to understand how you wake up as well. And this relates to a lot of fascinating psychological study, which is about how the attitude with which one goes to sleep will impact the actual nature of the sleep itself. So gratitude is one of these fascinating things. There's so much research which is done that a person's physiological sleep will improve if a person has an expression of gratitude before they go to sleep. If a person writes down two things of gratitude before going to sleep, it has been shown chemically that a person will sleep better. This is not just ideas and nice things. Let me say, physiologically, a person will be able to do this as well. And it's in the second paragraph, it's easy to see how gratitude could have this effect. An attitude of gratitude makes you more aware of the good things in your life. This upbeat, positive outlook helps keep pessimism and worry at bay. So it's no surprise that a number of previous studies have linked gratitude to greater happiness, satisfaction with life, and optimism about the future. Fewer studies looked for a connection between gratitude and sleep. However, a couple that did find the benefit. In their seminal research, psychologists Robert Emmons, who's the sort of father of thankfulness, and Michael McCullough, asked people with neuromuscular disorders to make nightly listing of things they were grateful. After 3 weeks, participants reported getting longer, more refreshing sleep. Following up on this lead, the researchers at the University of Manchester in England looked at how gratitude might affect people's snooze time. Their study included 400 adults of all ages, 40% with sleep disorders, who completed questionnaires that asked about gratitude in sleep and pre-sleep thoughts. Gratitude was related to having more positive thoughts, fewer negative ones at bedtime. This in turn was associated with dozing off faster and sleeping longer and better. In short, when you cultivate gratitude throughout your day, you're more likely to have positive thoughts as you're drifting off to sleep. Rather than ruminating over the friend who forgot to call, you're thinking about the coworker who stayed late to help you. Instead of obsessing over bills, you're thinking about the client you just landed. With a positive thought as a lullaby, the more likely you are to drift off into a peaceful slumber. And it's fascinating that the Rambam says, so what happens if you can't go to sleep? Let's say you say Kriya Shema and you can't go to sleep, and it's not doing it for you. You know what the Rambam says? It says, repeat the paragraphs of Tehillim again until you fall asleep. Right? Now, Dr. Huberfeld just pointed out to me beforehand, he says that it's actually medically recommended is that you take a very vanilla activity on repetition, which allows a person to sort of stop obsessing and micro-focusing on specific issues which are preventing oneself. So medically speaking, he thinks that I'm just talking as a doctor, not just as a spiritual practitioner there as well, which is why people, of course, talk about counting sleep, sort of a monotonous activity which just sort of brings that. But instead of just counting sheep, we can actually imagine that one's sleep process was accompanied by saying the psukim of Yosheb Eser Zaryon until one drifts off, right? So I sort of had an ending with that meditation upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very profound experience of a person, and one can understand how that would impact one's future day, Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, folks, this is a lot of